All right, so let's go to Genesis chapter 39. I'll let Steve have the uncomfortable chapter, and we'll move right on past it like he dealt with it. We'll move right on. I didn't get the chance to thank him for filling in last week as we were away at Bible camp, but I know he did a good job with that. So let's go to Genesis chapter 39. Chapter 38 is an interlude from the main topic, which is Joseph and his journey to Egypt and all the things that occurred there as he was taken in slavery, and how he rose by the hand of God all the way to second in all of Egypt in authority. As we get to chapter 39, we come back to Joseph. He's been sold into slavery. Now, I have a couple of questions for you. Trivia questions. And I meant to get y'all a little gift to see if anybody could get it right. But who can tell me, raise your hand, who can tell me Joseph's Egyptian name? Without looking, you cannot look at chapter 41. And to be fair to you, if you'd asked me before I studied again, I would have forgotten what his name was, because it's not easy to pronounce.
In
last letter of the alphabet, of the English alphabet. Oh, I thought somebody might get it. Zaphnath Penne. Okay, didn't get that one. No, I didn't have to worry about special gift. I'll give you another chance, though. That was Joseph's Egyptian name. Okay, without looking, and if you looked ahead, what was his wife's name? Oh, Mrs. Joseph, or Mrs. Zaphnath. If you know Nath, you're close there. Asnath. Yeah. All right, now, these two you better get. Okay, I saved the easiest for last. Who are the two sons of Joseph? You got it, Miss Melinda? Good. We'll talk more about them when we get there. I thought that was interesting. There's some names to store away. Joseph, Zaphnath. If you just remember the first part, you're okay. And Asnath, yeah. All right, so we'll get there. That's after he interprets Pharaoh's dreams. I plan to try to cover a great portion today. We'll see how that goes. But let's go to the house of Potiphar. So verse 1 of chapter 39 says, "Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard," so keep that in mind, "the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had brought him from the Ishmaelites, who had brought him down there." Okay, so Joseph, we've got a little bit of time. He's been traveling with this group of other slaves who are being sold. He comes into Egypt, sold to the house of Potiphar. How old was Joseph when he was sold into slavery? 17. So keep that in mind. We'll come back to an age later, and we'll kind of figure out how long he's in slavery and in prison. Who's Potiphar? What do we know about this guy named Potiphar? So he's a captain of the guard. Captain of the guard. What? Yes, he does have influence. He has some power, right? He's the leader of a whole guard. Good number of soldiers that would be underneath him. So he has some power and authority in that area. It also notes him as being an Egyptian What does that imply? There were men who weren't Egyptians, right, who were serving the guard. I had one person say, it's quite possible that at the time, the Egyptian people were not governed by an Egyptian. There might have been another ruling nation in power at the time. I don't know if that's true or not. That was one suggestion for why that note is made. But he was an actual Egyptian who Joseph was brought into his home. All right, so it says he's brought into his house. Verse 2, now this is an important phrase that's come up with other people, but it is often with Joseph. Verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. So a couple important things there. Number one, the Lord was with him. What does that indicate? What? Divine providence. What did you say, Becky?
That he obeyed God.
That he was obedient, right? God was proud to use him, right? God gave him a special honor to give him success in his life, providentially. And we'll see that as we go through, that despite very difficult circumstances, he remains faithful. So you think at this point, he's been sold into slavery, and yet he still remains faithful to God. Prosperous, that's what the King James or New King James Version. Successful is what the English Standard has. So it's that idea of God is making him successful. Now God has an ultimate plan in mind, doesn't he? Where God wants him to get to. Yeah. So one way, in this verse, what's one way we see God making him successful? Just in this one verse, what's something you note there that speaks to God's giving him prosperity?
That he was in his Egyptian master's house.
He was in the actual house. He wasn't out somewhere else. He wasn't stowed away. But he was actually in the house. And there's an interesting phrase as we keep reading. Verse 3, his master saw that the Lord was with him. Notice that. That's something very similar to Daniel, isn't it? Daniel has a lot of influence with a lot of the Babylonian ruler and then with others that would come after because of what those men saw God doing in Daniel's life. Well, here you see God working in Joseph's life, and what's the response of Potiphar? Well, something's going on here, right? He takes recognition of the fact God is with him. Now, again, that word, Lord, what word is that?
Yahweh.
Yahweh, which is the name of God. And so if we can contextualize it, when people talked about the God of the Hebrews, he was known as Yahweh. And so that would make him different from their gods.
If you go all the way back to Jacob, so Jacob went down to the work for his father-in-law, his father-in-law saw in Jacob the same thing. God prospered Jacob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same with Isaac, right? Same with Abraham. So we have seen this over and over again now with Joseph. So the master saw that the Lord, Yahweh, was with him and that the Lord, Yahweh, caused all that he did to succeed in his hand. So he sees the result. This is, again, kind of like Laban with Jacob. Remember, Laban saw that God prospered Jacob. And so what did Laban do? He gave Jacob more responsibility over his property so that he could be more successful. Kind of the same thing going on here. Everything Joseph is doing, God is causing to be prosperous. And so, what does he do? Well, he gives him more responsibility. So Joseph found favor in his sight. Why did he find favor? Because he was making him money. He was prospering his household. And so he found favor and attended him. Now notice there a step, okay? He's brought him into the home after seeing some success. It's kind of maybe the implication there. Then he sees him continuing to succeed, and now he's not only in his house, but he's doing what? He's attending him, right? He's attending Potiphar. And he made him an overseer of his house to the extent that he put him in charge of all that he had. From that time, he made him overseer in his house over all that he had, and the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge. Then notice, because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. So he had complete trust in Joseph. He gave him all. You imagine that? You give it over to somebody who's been brought in your house as a slave, and you've given him control of everything? So much so, he just worried about, okay, when we eating? All right?
It reminds me of a old textile plant mm-hmm. where people have started working there as pushing a broom. And they move up through the ranks, and one day they're plant manager.
Yeah. And this is in a short time period. But that's the level of trust. Now, I think this will play a part later on, and we'll talk about it when we get to his wife and what she tries to do. But that's where we are at the point where Potiphar's wife enters the picture. All right, so Joseph is in control of everything. So he has a lot of authority in that household.
His reputation is growing. I mean, people see this. Obviously, they have a lot of servants.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of people that work for them, coming and going, and all this stuff. And Joseph's the real deal. I mean, he's not climbing the ranks for his own.
Yeah.
He's
working hard in a difficult situation. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's go there. So let's go to the next one. That sets up what's going to happen afterwards. I think that's the only reason why Moses notes that is because of what happens. So it says in the end of verse 6, if I was doing verse breaks, I would have put a verse break here. I don't understand why there's not one. But here we are. Now, Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. That's also an interesting way to have that translated. Do you ever walk up to a man, ladies, and say, "Man, you're handsome in form and appearance." Verse 6, the end of verse 6. That's the English Standard Translation of that. "You're handsome in form and appearance." Next time Lisa writes me a card for Valentine's Day, you don't want to put that on there. No. But he's explaining to us I think he's setting the context of what's happening with Potiphar's wife. Now, we're never told her name. We don't know her name. We just know her simply as the master's wife or Potiphar's wife. But verse 7 says, she cast her eyes, that's the English Standard, she cast her eyes on Joseph. There's a lot implied in that, isn't there? We talked about the belly. I think it's a little bit of the belly, right? The lust of the flesh. She is lustful. Not not infatuated necessarily, I guess maybe you might use that term, but she is lusting, she's desires for him physically. And so she said to him, and maybe she said this to other people and gotten a different response, but she just simply says, lie with me. Now we have younger people, so I'm going to move on past that if that's okay. But you get the implication here of what she's trying to do. And maybe she gets a response that shocks her. I don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us her actual response other than she becomes more persistent. But it says he refused. And then I love this. His response, I mean, this. I don't know if you could say this better than what Joseph says. Verse 8, behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house. He has put all things that he has in my charge. He, this is the English Standard Translation, he is not greater in this house than I. Notice that statement. He is not greater than I. That says something, doesn't it? Of the power and authority he has in this household. However, nor has he kept anything back from me except you. Okay, that's the one area, other than the food, right? That Joseph, that's Potiphar's wife alone. No sharing. And so, but it's the rest of it that, to me, really speaks to the character of who Joseph is. He says, how then can I do this great wickedness? So he's trying to explain how great, or he's adding that extra modifier on there, great, to explain how awful it would be to do what she's wanting him to do. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? He jumps Potiphar and he says, goes right back to God. Why does he say it that way? Now, I know from a bigger biblical standpoint, any sin is sin against God ultimately. But why would, in the minute context of the moment, why would he say it like that?
Okay.
Okay, and that would be a reflection on his God, Yahweh. Yeah. And it would be a real abuse of his power to do this. I mean, he says, no one's greater, not even Potiphar in this house than me. Now, if I take that same authority and do this with you, I mean, that's even worse in some ways. That's even a greater wickedness. But why does he say sin against God? I think part of what he's saying is my God's different than yours. My God isn't like your God. My God requires us to live a certain way. We're not like the idols in Egypt. Yahweh expects us to live morally and upright. Say again. Yeah, and I think that's true. Absolutely. And so he says, I can't do this and sin against God. And so he holds the line in a difficult time to hold the line. Most young men put in that position. I don't know how attractive she was. But here's this woman, and she says she's getting rid of all the red tape. You don't have to romance me. Right? You don't have to worry about romance. I mean, that's what she's saying, isn't it? And yet he says, no, I cannot. He refused to do that. We can refuse our flesh. We should never say, I am beyond refusing my flesh. I can't help myself. Yes, you can. Joseph proves we can refuse the flesh. But what are the two key elements? Mind and heart, right? We have to be convinced and convicted, right? Yes, ma'am.
As a sidebar issue, I think it also shows us a view of Mary. I use Mary loosely, a view of the relationship. Potiphar and this woman had a relationship. It had nothing to do with God or religion as we recognize it in this day. But Joseph recognized it. And he knew it. And it was involved, that God was involved in their relationship.
And a violation of
whether Joseph or some other guy, it would have been a violation against God.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think that goes back to the principle of Matthew 19. Have you not? It was not so from the beginning. Talking about the Moses giving writ of divorce to people.
We have no idea about their marriage ceremonies or what they called it or.
That doesn't matter, but yeah. And he had no right to that. Joseph had no right to their relationship. All right, so in Hebrews 13:4, right, the marriage bed is undefiled. But what? Whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. Right. So let's go back. He says, I can't do this. She's not done, is she? Temptation isn't all gone. He didn't just deal with it one moment. But verse 10 says, and as she spoke to Joseph day after day. That's sin and temptation, isn't it? It's relentless. It's day after day. He would not listen to her. What does that indicate? He would not listen to her. What?
Resistant.
Putting her down, right? He didn't even entertain the thought, right? It's the idea, I am expunging this out of my mind before it even gets in. Because one of the difficulties, I think, with temptation is when we let it in the door and we begin to ponder on it. Maybe we don't do it in that moment. But maybe it sets something in our mind if we don't expunge it and it lingers with us. That's why things like images can be so detrimental because they can get into your mind and you can linger over an image, right, that you've created either in your mind or you've seen in media or online or whatever. And that image stays, or that thought, right? Thought stays with you. Those things linger. He said, the text says, he would not listen to her. He didn't want to hear her speak about it. And so, verse 11 says, but one day, okay, she was done. It's time to bring out the big guns. I'm going to force my way on this. Because he would not listen. When he went into the house to do his work, none of the men noticed opportunity. Opportunity. She knew her opportunity was available. When none of the men, it's just her and him, none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment. Notice the force here. Saying, lie with me, but he left his garment in her hand and fled. Is there a time to flee? What is that old phrase? It's fight. Fight or flight. I thought there was a third one, but yeah. There's a time sometimes to fight, but then there's a time to flee. Hey, if that jacket has to come off to get out of there, you leave the jacket, right? That's the principle here. Don't let anything make you linger in a place where you should not be lingering. Sometimes there's a time to run. We are not all powerful. We are not God. Sometimes we need to make the wise choice when we know we can't overcome a sin. And there may be a temptation in our life that we on our own cannot overcome. Get away from it. And that's what he did. He fled. Yes.
But it's interesting on her part. Don't give us a lot of information, but a woman who is actually trying to seduce somebody, when she gets rejected, that causes feelings within them to be even more aggressive and becomes an affront to them. How dare you turn me down? I'm the prettiest woman in the world. And so that kind of mindset is kept building in her.
Yeah, and so I won't read all this, but she, of course, she's left there with the garment. He has ran away to get out of that situation. He obviously did not go forever. He eventually is going to come back because they're going to arrest him. He does come back, but before he comes back, what does she do? Lies. I mean, she makes a straight up lie about him. That he had tried to molest her, right? So she completely flipped it on him. He was completely in the right, and yet she just straight out lied against him. And so, yes, ma'am. Well, so the biblical text does not indicate us anything that about that. Now, was he going to Potiphar and saying, hey, she's making advances, or did he feel like he didn't have that right? Did he feel like he had it dealt with? I don't know. That part, we don't know what was going on in the interval with Potiphar. But I want to come back to that question in a minute, because Potiphar's punishment is a little bit interesting. She has this lie, and the thing is, there are no witnesses to back up Joseph's side of the story, are there? It's he said, she said, straight up. And so then Potiphar has a decision to make. Who do I believe in this situation? Verse 19, she goes to Potiphar. She says, this is the way your servant treated me. And the text says his anger was kindled. Now the implication seems to be toward Joseph, and maybe it was. But verse 20 tells us what? He took him and put him into prison. Now one thing I had read on that is that actually seems a little bit of a light sentence or judgment against him. As though maybe indicating Potiphar had maybe a little tough time believing his wife. But again, I want to be careful about not reading into the text. It doesn't indicate that one way or the other. There's something that we'll come back to later that will be kind of interesting in this regard. But I'll hold that for the next class. But he was put into the prison. And there we get into chapter 40. Go ahead, Roger.
It looks to me like he didn't even really get a chance for a defense, or he didn't put up a defense.
At least Moses doesn't say anything about it, right? He doesn't give us anything that Joseph said when he got back, right? I didn't do this. He doesn't give us any of his defense. Now, was he not allowed to make a defense? Again, it doesn't seem to indicate that he was. He was just thrown into prison. And again, I don't know the Egyptian laws of the time of how they would deal with this stuff. Being a captain of the guard gave him a lot of sway, I'm sure, on the judgment. But I honestly just don't know the Egyptian laws of the time of how they would have regarded that kind of act. Yes, ma'am. Potiphar's wife. That's okay. I'd use Joseph's example, right? There may be a time to flee. Well, we can't control what others say about us, right? We can, now, there's nothing wrong with defending ourselves as far as like saying, hey, I didn't do that, I had no part in that. But ultimately, we're not in control of other people as far as what they do in response. But I think for us, we have to be careful about getting ourselves out of situations where they may be detrimental to us spiritually. And it may be having to not hang out with a friend anymore that you've hung out with, or maybe a work environment that's not good for you, or, you know, you fill in the blank of whatever that might be. But I think Joseph tells us there's a point where you refuse it again, but there's a certain point where you have to say, I'm getting out of here. Yeah, he was tied to that home. That's another good point.
You know, it's quit your job if you have an harassment by a co-worker. Joseph had an option.
Mm-hmm. Which may have taken away his right to defend himself, too. Like going back to Roger's point earlier, I don't know if slaves would have had the right for a full-fledged defense. Oftentimes, when you have a slavery situation, they don't have the same rights that a full-fledged citizen does. We even see that in the New Testament in a similar case, a little different, but Paul, being a Roman, had more rights than a Jew living in Judea did, right? And he had the right to appeal to Caesar, whereas if you were a Jew living in Judea, you couldn't appeal to Caesar. And so, I hand up here first.
You know, reading between the lines is really dangerous, and we have mm-hmm.
Yes.
She wouldn't have waited to the time when she was the only one in the house. I mean, if she was as powerful as it seems she was, she could have just commanded him. I mean, I would think.
Well, I think she was trying to, yeah.
She waited till nobody was in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And was like she was trying to entrap him. But yeah. I've always looked at it as a different way. I think he knew exactly what happened. I think he saw. He had to get rid of him. He had to save his space and his reputation.
You talking about Potiphar?
Yeah, Potiphar. He knew everybody in the house knew it. I mean, come on.
Well, and they probably, and my guess is this is not the first time she's done this. And also, like, she could have just, when he ran away, I mean, she could have just went on living and, like, took his coat and threw it away, right? She didn't have to do what she did. It shows a person who's being vengeful, like they are striking out at Joseph because she knows what the response is going to get. And so, interesting, yeah. Roger.
Oh, I mean, you know, I guess I always wondered if perhaps Joseph didn't put up a defense because she knew it would be bad for her, like death or something. But that's pure speculation.
Yeah, I'd have to think about that one. I've never heard that theory. But whatever the reason was, we don't know all those. And like Ms. Lynn said, you got to be careful about reading in twin lines. But what we do know definitely happened was he ends up in prison, but that does not cause him to defy God. So if you go to the end here, verse 22, the keeper of the prison. So he's in prison now. Let's see, wait, back up. I'm going to close this out, and then we'll move on. Let's go back to, I'm sorry. Let's go to verse 20. So Joseph's master, Potiphar, took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners, notice that, the king's prisoners were confined. Again, maybe a display that Potiphar's trying to deal with a situation where maybe he knows how his wife is. He likes Joseph, and so he feels like he's got to act. I got to put him in prison, but I'm going to put him into the king's prisoner's prison. So that's where he ends up. He's confined. But the Lord, notice this again, verse 21, the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love, notice response of God. When we succeed spiritually, how does God respond? With love. God's steadfast love, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. So again, God blesses him to succeed, to prosper. Verse 22, and the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. So again, you have Joseph, by the hand of God, quickly rising back up. I think about that first Peter passage. When we humble ourselves in the sight of the Lord, he will lift us up, right? Here's Joseph again showing humility and God lifting him up. He says, whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. Again, the extent of his authority in the prison. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge. That's a level of trust that extends beyond normal measure, isn't it? How many people in your life do you just trust them completely to where you don't look at anything they do or say? Most of us don't do that. Or we have very few people in our lives that we put that kind of trust in. The keeper of the prison was paying no attention to anything. Joseph was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. Again, the repeat of that. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. So again, Joseph being blessed over and over by God in very difficult moments. But we again see the providence of God at work. Brianna, then on. And maybe that's the case. We just got to be careful with speculation, right? Let's be careful that we don't put it over the text so that it's unflexible or binding, right? We don't know for sure. I have some hints that maybe I agree with that. But again, that's speculation. Jody?
Mm-hmm. And to your point, I don't know that he really wanted to punish, but he couldn't just let it go because of the accusations. But my point was here, that even in any difficulty you go through, God can work his plan. Mm-hmm. Because from the beginning of Joseph's life, God's intent that he was going to end up in Pharaoh's house. Mm-hmm. And this is just another stepping stone, if you will, that God uses to accomplish.
Yeah. Anything else?
Well, in Proverbs, I just looked it up, and I always remember this. In Proverbs, the 16th chapter, and 7th verse, God tells us that if your ways are pleasing to me, I will make even your enemy live at peace with you. Mm-hmm. I experienced that throughout my journey.
Proverbs 16:7.
And keep that in mind. Yeah, God at work. Anything else for a close? Again, thank y'all so much for being here. We'll get into chapter 40, and we'll talk about some visions. I'm going to try to move through some of this kind of quick because some of it's just repetition. They're going to repeat the same information. But go ahead and read chapters 40 through 45 if you can this week, and we're going to try to attempt to get through most of those chapters. Next Sunday. Did you have something, Becky?
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't know Psalm 105, it refers to Joseph when he's in this prison. Verse 17 says, he sent a man before them, even Joseph, who was a soldier, a servant, whose feet they hurt with fetters. He was laid in iron. Until the time that his word came, the word of the Lord tried him. And the king sent and loosed him, even the ruler of the people, let him go free. I don't know, it just seems like there's more to his time in prison than we hear about this, half of the section.
Yeah, there's a lot of information we're not given. And that's an interesting text about the fetters and the bonds. And think more about those things. But But God, the Holy Spirit, didn't reveal all of it to us, but He gave us enough to see what I think we need to see in the text, which is God working through Joseph to do something great. As Joseph will point out later, Joseph was sent to Egypt to what? What does Joseph tell his brothers? God sent me to Egypt to do what? To save His people. Right? Absolutely. So that's kind of the theme verse as you continue to read about the life of Joseph. I mean, it comes up over and over again. Turner?
We constantly, when you read about Christ, He never came to His own defense either.
Mm-hmm.
And the pattern He goes from Joseph on
up. As a lamb before its shears is silent, so is He. Isaiah 53. Good comments. Great class. Thank you so much. We'll move forward. Like I said, please go ahead and try in this week to read 40 through 45. They're not too long. You can get your way through them. We'll see how we do. Before we close out our time, this evening, is there anyone that was not able to partake of the Lord's Supper? We have one. Okay, let's have a prayer to close out this period. Do you mind, Van? And Van will lead us as one partakes tonight. Let's close for a word of prayer.